Cynthia Nelson, I am so happy to have you on because I have a burning question for you. Ready?
Awesome. Shoot. Tell me. Yes.
Okay. E-commerce is really evolving, and you in particular have been finger on the pulse since its get-go, but now like the whole space is evolving. So my burning question is, shoppable video or video commerce? What do you call it?
Yeah, I call it video commerce because it's not just shoppable video, right? So it's the live shoppable video. It's one-to-one shoppable. It's VOD. It's advertising, right? Ads that are shoppable. You know, Roku, NBC, all of these guys are testing all the ad systems now to make shows shoppable. I call it video commerce just to encompass everything in one place. I'm sure that it'll evolve over time.
Okay. Hey, it's E.B. Moss, and this is episode 17 in season 2 of Insider Interviews, where you get the insider scoop on the business of media, marketing, and advertising. And boy, are you going to get some scoop today from Cynthia Nelson. She bills herself as a business builder at the intersection of content, culture, and commerce, and she delivers. She was one of the early stage developers of e-commerce and now has leveraged her understanding of e-commerce to add shoppable video to her tools in Luminacion, her consultancy. She moves around, she works with some of the biggest movers and shakers, and she has lots of insights for you today. So here's Cynthia. Well, you heard it here, maybe not first, but probably close to first, because I want to explain why you were the woman to answer this question. You were like the first person, I think, who picked up and moved to Silicon Valley in the 90s, no less. And you helped produce what I think were like the first e-commerce then shopping sites for Barry Diller and HSN. I mean, wow, Cynthia, what was that like?
Yeah, it was just a great opportunity, and it was really Barry Diller's first kind of investment in Silicon Valley, in the Internet Shopping Network was what it was called. Uh-huh. It was a precursor for Amazon, frankly.
Yeah.
So it was like, the online mall, and some of the products came from HSN. So I think he was looking at it, rightfully so, as another distribution path for content and commerce that was new. We also did first auction and first outlet. So first auction was pre-eBay. In fact, we launched, eBay launched about 2 months afterwards. We both sent each other flowers. And then I realized, wow, their business model is, I think, better than ours, but good for them. And then first outlet. So it was a way to, disposition products that weren't sold on HSN into another realm. And that actually got acquired in HSN and incorporated into Home Shopping Network.
Okay.
As a product.
I rest my case. Finger on the pulse kind of woman. It's amazing. But you also, and you famously describe yourself as a three-time founder. So take us back a little bit from the early Silicon Valley HSN competing with eBay days to now you have yet another consultancy. Fill in the blanks a little bit, Cynthia.
The long and winding road, right? So I did the Internet Shopping Network side. So that was a first kind of startup I was in. I worked with Tribal DDB and DDB Corporate in strategy in New York and Chicago. And then I landed actually in Miami. And I was getting a divorce at the time, and I was married to a Latino. So I understood the market really well and the culture very well. And someone said, you need to meet this woman, Jillian Sandler. And they said, oh, she's starting this company called Todo Bebe. And I said,
that was a little fast for some of my general market listeners. Yeah. Todo Bebe?
Todo Bebe means everything baby or all things baby in Spanish, right? Todo and then bebe.
Okay.
So I said, oh, that's interesting. She said, oh, this is like a 10-year flyer. The market is not where we're at. We're creating a 360 platform in media entertainment for pregnancy and parenting in Spanish for parents with kids 0 to 5 in the house.
Okay.
So it was everything from television. We had a full television program slate on Telemundo for 4 years, and then we had it on Univision for another 3 years, producing 46 original hour-long episodes a year. So we were in production every day of the year, all year long. We had live events we did in parking lots with Walmart. We had the first kind of virtual events that we did with 500,000 homes in the U.S. celebrating babies on one day. All of our clients were, you know, Walmart, P&G, Disney, you name it, Mattel, Hasbro. We worked with everybody who was servicing a parent with a child, you know, 0 to 5 in the house. So it was all the major brands that you would think of. We built that out. We raised private equity in 2008. And then we sold the company to a publicly traded company in 2012. It was a very long time. And the first 4 years, we self-funded.
So a lot of content, a lot of major brands, a lot of, you know, probably what we now call retail media, et cetera, and leveraging your experience with e-commerce. And was that all out of Miami? Did you stay there?
Yeah, that I was there for 12 years. We filmed there, but then we had producers filming all over the country and also in Mexico.
Got it.
So we went to the studio once a month and shot for 4 days, and we shot 3 or 4 episodes a day. Uh-huh. And then did packages. So we were built in package segments so that we could split apart the shows. Mm-hmm. We were way ahead of our time in cutting content into relevant pieces. So we could literally bring all those segments together and then license that out as a separate entity. So we did licensing all throughout the world of our, we had radio programming too, so radio, internet, and then we did product licensing.
So everything is sort of coalescing. Not only then, but now. So lots of hands-on experience with video that featured products and the content and multicultural marketing, et cetera. So then let's skip forward a little quickly to the last few years. What have you been doing?
The last probably 10 years since I sold the company, I've been consulting in strategy, and also in video commerce for companies like, you know, Audible and Amazon and Sony Music, US and Latin, you know, Bose Ventures. I've worked with a bunch of startups helping raise capital for them. And I've invested also in other companies. And now with my current company, Luminacion, which is a fake word that I made up many, many years ago. Happened to secure the URL for, but it's a consultancy around video commerce and strategy of video commerce. So going into big brands and saying, look, if you want to do video commerce, we need to come in and understand what kind of talent you have, what your brand messaging is, what content you currently have, how you're measuring it, where is it in the funnel exactly? What are you trying to do with video commerce and actually build out, measure where they're at today and then build out a strategy for the future so they can actually win. Is I think many, many brands go into video commerce, they do it once and they expect everyone to join. And I always say, it's not, did you do that with Facebook?
Right.
You posted once and everybody was just going to run to you. You didn't do that. You built a strategy over time to grow an audience. It's the same exact thing. It's no silver bullet. It's no panacea. It's just another spoke in the wheel of your marketing.
Yeah.
Mix, frankly.
Got it. So give us an example of what that actually looks like. Can you give us a case study of a company that has embraced and done the strategy work and had the patience to, you know, time and again implement video commerce?
I think one of the best examples, it wasn't our client, but one of the best examples is actually Walmart. They got in very, very early, which surprises a lot of people, but those budgets for innovation, you know, don't come out of the media budget originally, they come out of innovation, and they're big testers. And I think they tested for 4 years, 3 to 4 years, every platform under the sun. Everybody was building for their business. They tested everyone under the sun. They knew that video commerce was something they wanted to get into. You know, they understand retailtainment. They understand media is retail. Retail is media. Right. They do get that. They get their consumer. They understand that they're watching short form content. But, you know, they invested a lot of money early on with very big celebrities, with Ree Drummond from, you know, Pioneer Woman. And it didn't go very well. You know, 10 people came, you know, but they were out there testing it to see what kind of content, length of content, what the call to action was, how it's supposed to work. And now I think they're producing probably 200 shows a year. Easy.
Wow. So would we, in the common vernacular, would we think of this as, you know, on Amazon Prime days and they started doing that, celebrities, hey, buy this at the top of the screen. That's a classic example of shoppable video, right?
I think when you look at companies that are doing well, also looking at platforms, right? I think TalkShop Live is probably leading the pack in that way. I mean, Walmart is their client. They have Best Buy as a client. They've got Universal and Sony and all the music groups and the merchandising groups. It's another way to sell merch for their artists. And it's an easy setup, right? They make it easy for the talent to just use a phone. Paul McCartney, I'm like, oh, did you do some big production? No, he had a phone. He had a literally iPhone in his studio, set it up, and he talked about his new album coming out. Hey, click here. You know, you can see it below the product listed, and you can buy the product live, utilize it. And I think the other side of the video commerce piece, and I always, you know, I think I'm a broken record on this one, is distribution. If you don't, you know, create it for your audience, that's great, and you're paid, earned, owned media, but where else can this content live? What other partnerships can you strike to push this content out into different areas where it's still shoppable?
Got it.
Right? It should be on. I think that's another thing TalkShop Live has done well, is they have deals with Hearst and Dot Dash Meredith and Penske and all those guys. Mm. So the content you produce on their platform can actually be distributed in other places. The more eyeballs,
right,
the more revenue, now, right? The more brand exposure, more revenue.
Is that where some of the lines become blurred with, let's say, digital out of home or retail media and shoppable video? And are we seeing very short videos in, you know, what we used to call shelf talkers or video displays or anything like that in store and in retail sites?
There definitely have been some. I know there are the shelf talkers and the small videos. And also, you know, you're walking through a store and it tags you.
Yeah.
Right? Look at something, or you scan a barcode or you scan a QR code and it starts showing you a video and explaining how that product really works. So all of that is kind of colliding.
Oh, okay. So we're connecting the dots. But you also did a panel, and I was grateful enough to have attended. And you talked about how video commerce is really revolutionizing the way we connect and human connection. Explain that a little bit and how it's influencing relationships and sales connecting.
I think, you know, the person who was speaking about that also on the panel, Carissa Price, you know, she's an ex Walmart VP of food consumables and health and wellness. So if you think about that, just that in general, health and wellness is massive already. So that's all pharmacy, right? And food and consumables, that's a very, very big job. And, you know, the consumer connection, that human connection, that a one-to-one, like the way we are today, it feels one-to-one, even though this video podcast is going to be distributed in a bunch of different places. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm talking to you, right? If you were someone I followed and interacted with, I'd be able to go on to a live video or video commerce and chat with you. I'd be able to ask questions that you could answer in the chat. You could tell me, hey, Cynthia just joined. We're so glad that you're back again. And you identified me not only by name, but in the analytics in the back end, you would actually know that I've been a previous purchaser of your products. You could even bring me on to your show and also have that one-to-one interaction and showcase to everybody else, hey, this is a client. This is Cynthia from wherever she lives now. She loves our product. I think the analytics you're getting on the back end of the video commerce sites now and platforms is amazing. You can tell what people are, the spikes in sales during the events. You can actually watch them and know what you've said. Very much like Home Shopping Network with the earbud.
Yeah.
Right? The whole customer journey, you're teaching people while they're there. You're interacting with them one-to-one. You're connecting with them in a very unique and authentic way. And you have a call to action to actually purchase something. And that's not always the reason that companies use video commerce. Yes, the ultimate goal is to sell, but there's also a way to explain.
Yeah.
If you think about Home copy network, they spend a lot of time. It's not just a pen. This is a gray pen that has an excellent ballpoint at the end. And when you write with it, it's you have to explain things in a way that is descriptive and interesting. And that takes talent.
Yeah.
That's trained to do that. But that enables you to get in the ear of the consumer. They're seeing something. They like you. It's authentic. And then it brings them down the funnel to buy.
Okay. Well, that was like a 301, not a 101. That was fantastic. Okay. Thank you. And that is why, as I teed you up, you are the expert to answer the question and the definition of video commerce, shoppable video. But you also are practicing what you preach with your own content, and you have a YouTube series and podcast and even an ebook called Let's Talk About Live Shopping, which I appreciated guesting on, I must say. Thank you. So I'm happy for you to do the deep dive now on this episode. So back to some of the strategy and new tactics that we're looking at. Where is the place for AI in this whole space? Is that really impacting things, I guess, by that connection and that data understanding?
Yeah, definitely. There are a couple different ways in the video commerce platforms that they're integrating AI. One is creative, mm-hmm. developing the creative, the output, the teasers. What kind of teasers are we going to have to bring people into it? So that's one side. The analytics side is also really interesting, right? Chatbots.
Yeah.
When you're online and you're asking questions, many, many of the questions you're asking have been asked before. So taking your FAQ, turning it into a chatbot, and being able to answer those questions instantaneously with consumers makes them feel like, even though they know it's probably a chatbot, you're answering those questions quickly in the chat that's in the live event. Mm-hmm. The other thing is being able to identify through AI where that customer is coming from. You're coming from Facebook, or you're coming from Instagram, or and that I've purchased before. Uh-huh. I've been a previous customer. You can then call those people out and identify them within the video. And then I think the analytics side on the front end, being able to understand who the audience actually is. I work with a company called Binge. I should say precursor. I was an early angel investor in them, but understanding the emotional intelligence of the consumer. They have what they call predictive on their side, like emotional predictive segmentation, personality driven segmentation, PDS. So you can actually understand with one sentence the actual types of customers and where they're at, what your current target audience is, and an untapped audience of people that are talking about the types of products you're selling. Huh. Whether you know them or not, across 192 data sources and 18 billion pieces of data they've analyzed in the last 5 years. So that's a huge kind of data set mm-hmm. on the front end before you even go out and do a video commerce or a live video shopping show or series of shows. Figure out what that audience actually is and utilize that AI-based research and analytics to go out and target correctly the right video teaser, the right creative, test the right talent, do all of that up front before you actually go and start spending money on advertising. Oof.
Okay. Now we're up to a 401. I'll give a little love to one of your investments. It's BINJ, correct? Binge?
Correct.
All right. Got it. So, all right. Okay. So speaking about investments, if you keep your investor hat on for a second, what are some of your more recent investments? I know that you focus a lot on women-led tech companies. Should I call my broker? What are you looking at? What are you loving?
Like Binge was one. It was actually about searching for and finding the right shows based on UCG content and love from the UCG content mm-hmm. from consumers. And then they pivoted to an advertising MarTech platform, which is what they are now. So that was early stage, like 4 years ago in AI. I just knew the two of them were really brilliant. Yeah. So I knew whatever they were going to build was going to take time because it's machine learning and big data sets to analyze before the data would be relevant. But whatever they were going to do, I wanted to understand. And then Recurved is the other company. Originally it was called The Performa.
Okay.
Because lot of companies have come to me when they're raising capital, and I ended up doing their performas, which is their 3 to 5 year analytic projections, finance projections. And they take a long time to do, not scalable from my perspective. And there's always an issue. There's always a mistake. Even if you're locking your formulas down, I was talking to a friend of mine, Sandra Galt, who's a 2-time entrepreneur. And I said, we've got to automate this thing. And she said, you know what? I want to do that. So 3 years ago, she started building out the platform to automate a 3 or 5 year performa. Now you can answer a group of questions, drop in all your data points, and it comes out with a fully blown 3 or 5 year performa, all the hooks. It's a database. It holds your investor information. You can allow investors to see some parts of it, all parts of it, and you can measure it. And you can also look inside of it at any given time and see how they're doing against the plan.
Okay. And that's recurved.
Right? And so she's now out of beta and currently selling, and they're selling licenses to family offices, VC groups, and the VC groups are handing them out and saying, if you want to get investment for us, you have to go through this process. Same. Okay. Every single time.
Well, you take a chance when you invest in things and you see the good news, the bad news. What are some of the personal lessons that you've learned or that you would impart on our audience of things you wish you hadn't done or things you would have done differently?
I don't know that there's anything I wish I hadn't done.
It sounds like you've done it all. That's why.
Because I was always kind of the idiot that you raised my hand and said, oh, I'll do it. And Mike, you'll do it. He'll eat anything. Those kind of thing, because I was always really curious about what's new, what's next. And it served me really well. Mm-hmm. Was I ahead of the curve? I've been ahead of the curve several times where, it was fairly painful. You know, not making any money for 4 years at Totoba Bay was extremely painful. But that was the only way for us to secure the rights and own the content so that we didn't have any investors owning content and owning rights to anything. And so it was a very purposeful reason for doing it. The things I have learned, there's all these entrepreneur workshops and classes and they teach it at college. I'm like, I don't know actually how you teach this. You either are or you aren't. I have many, many friends, love them dearly, who have left corporate and wanted to start a consultancy and be independent. And then they realize they get into it and they say, oh my God, this is really hard. I have to find the business, work the business, do the business, find the business, work the business. This is I'm always pitching. I'm always like, this is actually what it is. Yeah. Do what you love and it won't feel like work.
Yeah.
And no is a very small word. It just means not right now. So you have to have, I think, thick skin and a lot of grit to be an entrepreneur and believe in your vision, but also have enough, maturity. I don't know if that's the right word for it, to hear other people. You know, you can fall in love with your baby to a point where, someone says your baby is ugly, and it may actually be ugly, but you don't want to hear it. You miss the opportunity to
make it prettier.
It may not be right at that moment, but I think surrounding yourself with people from other industries is really important, because you pick up ideas and information that you never really have thought were interesting for your business that apply directly.
You know, I'm going to add another one from the Cynthia Nelson School of Do What I Do, which is be nimble. You have picked up and moved at the drop of a hat. You just did it last month again, partly for lifestyle. You'll tell us about that in a second. But I mean, to venture into Silicon Valley, to conquer Miami. I knew you in New York, and now I'm missing you in LA. And what else is going on in your life?
The move for us personally was more about becoming digital nomads.
Love right? that. Because you can.
Because we can, because I can work anywhere and it doesn't really matter. So that was kind of the impetus of LA. And then eventually it will be Barcelona.
Cool.
That's where we can travel. And I work a different lifestyle, kind of hours, three to midnight versus when I'm on the West Coast.
Hence
I'm up
nimble.
At late. So that was a lifestyle change from New York City. I've been there 10 years. So I feel like a New Yorker and I love New York to death. My husband was there 15 years, loves it to death. And we decided Binge was out here on the West Coast, and we decided, hey, it's really easy. West Hollywood kind of has a great bus system, a lot of walking ideally, which is what, you know, we're used to coming from New York. And again, Binge was here, so I walked to their office a couple days a week, which is just
I lived in LA for 9 years, and you can hear one of my episodes, episode one of season two with Jarl Mohn, who ran E! Entertainment Television. And the thing about that was that I could actually walk to the E! Offices. It was remarkable, or bike or something. Nobody did that. People would look at me walking on the sidewalks. It was crazy. And now I'll be back in LA, dropping the dime, for Podcast Movement Evolutions, which is in downtown LA. And I'm so looking forward to seeing how public transportation has changed and, you know, perhaps not have to rent a car and rely on some of those buses. So I love those new changes. I miss California. I'll be sure to see you when I'm out there for Podcast Movement.
I heard it's snowing in New York and it's 58 degrees this morning here.
Yeah, so. Our snow lasted exactly 17 seconds and nothing stuck. But speaking about climate change, which I'm passionate about, and embracing public transportation, I know that you really leveraged your understanding of the Hispanic marketplace and put that into your personal brand purpose. So, you know, I always ask my season two guests what their either definition of brand purpose is or how a brand should embrace it more authentically. So I do want to give you a hat tip in the area of personal purpose and brand purpose. I know that you leveraged your experience and understanding of the multicultural marketplace and ended up being awarded with the first Pioneer Prevention Award for changing health disparity among underserved populations. I know that's still a big issue today. Tell us about that and also how you would advise companies to embrace brand purpose.
And this harkens back to Toto Bebe, so I'll give you just the short, high-level version of it. We actually, and I give it a big we, because there are four of us in Toto Bebe that got that award from Richard Carmona, Dr. Carmona, at that time, because we were providing information and content and serving that up in a way that was digestible, easy to understand for a community that was very, very underserved in health and wellness situations. Mm-hmm. We understood that there were health disparities across our marketplace. And these were parents, Spanish-speaking dominant parents with children 0 to 5 in the home. We knew that because of the questions that they were asking in our chat rooms at that time and how our answers were then being developed into content. We also understood that organizations like Health and Human Services and March of Dimes and the American Heart Association were also trying to address and provide content and information that was useful to a population that did not always identify obesity in the home, that did not always quantify there's a heart issue in the or diabetes, and how do you prevent that from happening with your children, listening and going to the doctor, you know, how do you get mental health services? And since we had a platform that was fun and entertaining and informative, we partnered with all of those organizations and came up with content for research that we pushed against our existing audience and then came back to them with validated research that they could then use, and also created content out of that with those partners, you know, losing weight the right way, understanding diabetes, again, in a very authentic, non-threatening, and in-culture way, which was the most important piece. You can't just shove information at people and expect them to understand it and to want to use it. We weren't speaking at them, we were speaking to them.
So that seems like part of the through line for our conversation is lessons from the past that you can still apply. Content is the through line, understanding your audience, using multiple platforms, and keeping your finger on the pulse and staying ahead of things by being nimble. Anything else I left out?
I think partnering with other companies.
Yeah.
We talked about AI, we're talking about video commerce. All of these things are emerging.
Right.
And there are a lot of different opinions out there. I think, again, what you do on your podcast, getting to the meat of things and clearing the air. I think what I do on my podcast, same thing. You know, what does video commerce really mean? How does it really work? These are all, you know, great pieces of data for consumers and for brands and for agencies who are looking to utilize these platforms. I think we're providing a great service by partnering again.
Yeah. Well, I love that I had the opportunity to talk a little bit more about podcasting on your show as a form of content. And now you're here really, really illuminating the whole world.
It's okay.
I love that it's a made-up word. I had no idea. I thought that my 4 years of Spanish, you know, I was just missing something. It's great. Cynthia Nelson, Luminacion. Thank you for joining us on Insider Interviews.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
Well, I hope you got some good insider scoop from this episode of Insider Interviews with me, E.B. Moss. If you enjoyed this content, please feel free to buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/mossappeal. And I hope you'll follow Insider Interviews on social media and let me know if you have a question or a suggestion for a next stellar guest in media, marketing, and advertising. Speaking of stellar, my theme music was composed and performed by the incomparable Grammy-winning John Clayton. If I can help you with your company's podcast, please find me at mossappeal.com. Thanks again for listening.